SBS Radio.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV broadcasts from, Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation and their elders, past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to, from the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from freshwater to saltwater.
Hello and welcome to NITV Radio. You are with Bertrand Tungandame, and I'm very happy to be with you this Monday afternoon. Now, coming up in your program today, we're just 2 days away from January 26th, a controversial day in Australian narrative, so we continue exploring stories relating to this contested event in our national narrative. First, we continue a conversation that we started last week with Tom Murray, the writer and director of The Skin of Others, a movie that will premiere on SBS World Movies tomorrow night. The film is described as a story of Australia, its violent past and its future potential as it recounts a tragic national history of Australian colonial relations with First Nations people. The film also explores the ways we tell the story of our nation and ultimately dreams of a more reconciled and inclusive Australian future. In the program, we also explore Nazara, Yearning Australia Day 2022, a mini festival. This is an event that will take place in Sydney on January 26th, and it's organized by the Australian South Sea Islanders community. It's described as an inclusive and diverse program, representative of leaders from the Australian South Sea Islander community, from Tweed Heads in Sydney, the Vanuatu community and the local Aboriginal community. We also bring you the latest health developments as we continue to grapple with the COVID-19 pandemic. But first, the latest news on NITV Radio.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
In this bulletin, specialized Indigenous health experts set to provide critical COVID-19 care to remote communities. The Novavax COVID-19 vaccine fully approved for use in Australia. And in sport, the hosts of the Women's Asian Cup forced to withdraw from the tournament. Specialized Indigenous health experts are banding together again this year to provide critical COVID-19 care to remote communities. The Victorian Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Organization CEO Jill Gallagher says 2022 is a crucial time to focus on the key measures that will help keep First Nations communities safe. Indigenous health experts will assist in the administration of vaccine doses against COVID-19 through the relaunch of the mobile vaccine van, which will be back on the road beginning in the Latrobe Valley this week. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander suicides have increased by 75% in Victoria, according to a new report. The Victorian Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Organisation and the Centre of Excellence for Aboriginal Social and Emotional Wellbeing say they are extremely disturbed by the report's findings. According to the two Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Organisations, the new report shows Victoria's mental health system is not built for Aboriginal people. Virtual CEO Auntie Jill Gallagher said the whole service system has a responsibility to ensure that there is no wrong door for our people to access help when required and that assistance will be delivered in a culturally safe way. Culture is a critical element to solutions and needs to be part of the way forward. Culture needs to be seen and understood as a protective factor for Aboriginal people. Healing and culture need to be core to the way forward. Fears of a rapid spread and high hospitalizations of COVID cases in the Aboriginal township of Cherbourg have not been realized. When the first cases of COVID-19 were detected late last month, authorities feared a rapid spread with dire consequences in a vulnerable population with low vaccination rates. Speaking to the ABC, Cherbourg Mayor Elisando said the community's success at flattening the curve has been attributed to the strong uptake of health advice to wear masks, stay home, and get tested if unwell. So far, only 2 people have been hospitalized and they have since recovered. There have been more than 200 confirmed cases of the Omicron variant in the community of about 1,200 residents, with 50 cases still active. And the average number of new daily cases is stable at between 4 to 5. The New South Wales government is trying to reassure residents it will be safe for children to go back to school. Some parents are concerned about their children having rapid antigen tests twice a week. Premier Dominic Perrottet says while he understands it's making some parents anxious, it's the right approach.
This is all about instilling confidence in our parents, in our children. I know many are anxious, but we believe the plan that we have in place alongside the Victorian government is one that works, one that is ready. We've invested significantly in it, and we're in a position, unlike other jurisdictions around the country, that can actually apply these rapid antigen tests because we went out early and resourced them.
New South Wales has recorded 24 further COVID-related deaths and 15,091 new cases. There are currently 2,816 people in hospital with the virus, 196 of whom are in intensive care. Meanwhile, Victorians are being urged to get a COVID-19 booster shot. The state has recorded 17 COVID-19 deaths and 11,695 cases. There are currently 998 people being treated in hospital, 119 of which are in intensive care and 47 of whom require ventilation. State Premier Daniel Andrews says people should continue to come forward for their booster.
Nothing's more important when it comes to protecting you, the people you love, and the people that we all count on, our nurses, our AMBOs and our doctors, the whole team across our health system. Nothing's more important for all of those reasons than getting a third dose.
Vulnerable members of Queensland's population are being urged to remain vigilant as the state nears the peak of its Omicron outbreak. Queensland is treating 878 people in hospital for the virus, with 50 in intensive care. Some 10,212 new coronavirus infections and 13 deaths were recorded in the latest reporting period. Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk says the next couple of weeks will be critical.
My message is to the vulnerable members in our community, those elderly senior residents, about minimising your movements. And as I said, perfectly okay to go and do your shopping, perfectly okay to go and visit your family, but please avoid mixing in crowds just over the next couple of weeks till we get through this peak and we can get through all of this together.
The Novavax COVID-19 vaccine has been given full approval for use in Australia. It was provisionally approved by the Therapeutic Goods Administration last week. Federal Health Minister Greg Hunt says it will become available on the 21st of February.
We have received the second green light from ATAGI in relation to the Novavax vaccine. I've spoken with the company both last week and this morning amongst many conversations, and we will be able to commence that program in the week of the 21st of February.
Supply shortages of rapid antigen tests are expected to impact today's rollout of the COVID-19 concession scheme. 6.6 million people, including pensioners, veterans and low-income earners, are now eligible and allowed up to 10 free tests from pharmacies within a 3-month period. But President of the Pharmacy Guild of Australia, Trent Toomey, told the Nine Network not every pharmacy will be able to proceed as planned.
We will have enough over the course of the program, but we don't have enough today. And so there are 6,000 community pharmacies in Australia, and 804 pharmacies went live this morning. So that's nationwide. There are pharmacies in every state and territory that will go live today. But 804 pharmacies out of 6,000 means simply the majority of pharmacies will not be going live.
Cleo Smith's alleged abductor is facing court in Western Australia today. The four-year-old was found alive and well 18 days after she disappeared from her family's tent at the remote Blowholes campsite in November last year. A fresh charge is expected to be laid against 36-year-old Terence Darrell Kelly, who is accused of assaulting a police officer. He's already charged with a number of offences, including forcibly taking a child, and will face a magistrate via video link from prison. And overseas, protests against COVID-19 vaccines and restrictions have been held in Belgium. Thousands of people gathered in the capital Brussels on Sunday with some violent confrontations between protesters and police towards the end of the rally. One protester going only by the name of Skinny says people from all over Europe came to take part in the protest.
It's an international manifestation, so there are coming people from Holland, from Germany, from France, from Italy, from Poland. There are 15 buses here, only from Poland. There were 1,500 people here today. So, says enough, eh? Everybody around Europe is sick of the measures that the government takes against us. They're taking away our rights and freedom.
Gunfire has rung out from several army camps in Burkina Faso's capital, but the government denies the military has seized power. A Reuters journalist reported heavy arms fire at a camp in the capital, Ouagadougou, which houses the army's general staff and a prison whose inmates include soldiers involved in a failed 2015 coup attempt. The incident has prompted fears that a coup attempt is underway after weeks of growing frustration with the government's handling of an Islamic insurgency rocking the country. It comes a day after protesters demanded the resignation of President Roch Marc Christian Kabore at a demonstration in Ouagadougou. Mr. Kabore has faced growing opposition since his re-election in November 2020. Conflict between U.S.-backed Syrian Kurdish fighters and militants has continued into a fourth day around a prison in northeastern Syria that houses thousands of members of the IS group. The clashes started late Thursday after the militants attempted to storm Gayran prison in Hasaki, killing dozens of guards and staff and enabling prisoners to escape. Kurdish military officials say dozens of IS gunmen have been killed. The attack is the boldest by IS militants since they lost a majority of their country in Syria in 2019. And 2 years after the horrific fires of the summer of 2019 and 2020, the Red Cross has released its latest report on the bushfire fund established to support those impacted by the blaze. 34 people were killed in the bushfires, which also burned through more than 18 million hectares and destroyed over 5,900 buildings, including 2,779 homes. $242 million was raised in the Red Cross fund, and over 6,000 people have been supported with grants to pay for building repairs, emergency expenses, and the cost of funerals. Red Cross National Recovery Coordinator Shona Whitton says disasters have widespread effects.
We often have quite a cross-section of communities who experience impacts by disasters. But, you know, the additional support grant really shows that the people who are perhaps more vulnerable to begin with do tend to suffer more after disasters. And that was the intention of the additional support grant, which really was the focus of the end of our distribution of funds over the last 6 months.
And to sport, the Women's Asian Cup has suffered a setback with hosts India kicked out of the tournament following a COVID-19 outbreak. The women's team was unable to field a team for their Group A match against Taiwan because too many players had COVID-19. Regulations require coaches to name a minimum 13 players match day squad for each game, and India's inability to do so caused Sunday's game to be cancelled and the team withdrawn from the competition. And now having a look at the weather around the country, Broome, a mostly cloudy day and a top of 30, Perth, mostly sunny, 33, Adelaide, humid and showers and a top of 29, Melbourne, humid and mostly sunny, 33, Hobart, partly cloudy, 25, Albury, Wodonga, partly cloudy as well and a top of 26, Canberra, much the same, 27, Wollongong, a shower of 224, Sydney, a few showers, 26, Newcastle, similar conditions, 26, Brisbane, partly cloudy, 30. Townsville, mostly cloudy, 29. Cairns, possible shower and a top of 32. Alice Springs, a sunny day, 28. Darwin, showers and a possible storm and a top of 31. And the Torres Strait Islands, a partly cloudy day and a top of 29. And that is NITV Radio News. And that was Freedom Ride by Troy Casadelli, and also featuring Paul Kelly, coming to you on NITV Radio this Monday afternoon with me, your host, Bertrand Tungandami. Now, The Skin of Others is the extraordinary life of Aboriginal World War I veteran and activist Douglas Grant. The Skin of Others, it's a documentary that actually that will screen on SBS Movie tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m. The film is a story of modern Australia told through the life of Douglas Grant. Douglas was such a great figure. He was a cultural bridge builder when it was extremely dangerous to be an Aboriginal man seeking reconciliation across the Australian racial divide. So with such an inspirational story, why was he forgotten to history? Well, with this film, Tom Murray, the writer and director of The Skin of Others, says that he's aiming to bring Douglas Grant's extraordinary life back to public attention. He says this is also the story of Australia, its violent past and its future potential. Grant is to be remembered most importantly as a fierce advocate for Aboriginal rights.
So Douglas Grant, from being such a fierce advocate for Aboriginal rights in the late 1920s and giving many public orations about the unfairness of the colonial administration in various ways in dealing with Aboriginal people. He suffered a breakdown in the early 1930s and he went to Callan Park Hospital. He was in Callan Park Hospital for the next kind of decade. So he was in there from the 30s till the beginning of the 30s till the end of the 1930s. I think there was a lot going on. Both his adoptive parents had died, so you know, Douglas, I think, was in need of some respite and in need of some secure lodgings. So he stayed in the military arm of Callan Park, Ward B, which is where the other return servicemen who were suffering kind of shell shock and post-traumatic stress from that period also stayed. Then he kind of had a very kind of quiet, relatively quiet life in the 1940s. And he died in the early 1950s. He was down, as you said, down at the kind of Return Services League at La Perouse. There's a place down out there on the island, and he was there. And he died of a heart attack in the early 50s. And because he'd had such an incredible life and been such a figure of great esteem to many who knew him. In 1958, John Thompson and Brian Hungerford, John Thompson being the father of Jack and Peter Thompson, Jack Thompson the actor, Peter Thompson the film critic, John Thompson did a really amazing radio documentary about Douglas Grant and kind of consolidated his kind of posthumous fame by recounting the different kind of aspects of his life. And he was really a figure that provoked a lot of interest because of the way that he navigated the different worlds, white and black. And many of his kind of comrades said that because he'd been enculturated by the Scottish family, he was like a white fella in their midst, but he obviously had a very strong kind of sense of his own Aboriginality and in the way that he was advocating for his own people. So he was one of these really interesting figures that people were trying to kind of get their heads around, and so that was a nationally kind of broadcast documentary in the 50s and would have consolidated his fame at the time. But he sort of went out of the public imagination after that, little bits and pieces, but he's certainly not as well known as many other figures, and he's certainly not as well known, in my view, as he should be for all of his profound work.
Now, the movie The Skin of Others sheds a light on Douglas Grant's legacy, and I believe will elevate him to the place where he ought to be. He deserves to be remembered as one of Australia's greatest and brightest minds.
Yeah, I hope so. It's like we're very kind of strongly in mind of preserving his legacy and revitalizing his legacy. And Balang Lewis, who many will know from his incredible acting career across many films, The Chant of Jimmy Blacksmith being his first film. Balang Lewis plays Douglas Grant in my documentary. And he really, really took to this role. It was a role he felt very close to and very dear to, because I think a big part of Balang's kind of public life was trying to come to some agreement between, you know, his own sense of Aboriginality and his own sense of his white heritage as well. So Balang Lewis was very keen to demonstrate Douglas Grant's incredible legacy. And the film is also, for those of you that will get to see it, is also a sort of homage to Balang Lewis as an incredible actor. He very much gets into the skin of Douglas Grant, and his great sense of imagination and empathy really brings Douglas Grant's story to light and to life, I think.
I've had a chance to preview the movie. It's full of archival documents, beautiful photographs and other pieces. Was it easy to access them? Must have been a really painstaking job gathering these documents.
Well, the film took 10 years to make, and it took 10 years to make because while there was some stuff that was out there in the public domain, a lot of it wasn't. And I tried to spend a long time trying to find Douglas's family in far north Queensland. So there's a big chunk of the film which is set in far north Queensland with different members of the Rainforest Nations up there, the Najon, the Mamo, people like Uncle Ernie Raymond, who's interviewed in the film, talks about what he knew of the history of that area, the massacre history, but also some of the cultural history of the area, and what Douglas Grant had he kind of grown to adulthood in those nations, you know, what life might have been like for him. And we do a little tour around some of the places that that Douglas Grant, if he'd grown up there, would have known well, some of the kind of the ceremony grounds and some of the other Bora grounds that would have been carved out of the rainforest that when Douglas Grant was growing up. So that all took a kind of long time to kind of get our heads around. We were also in Berlin trying to go through the archives of the Royal Prussian Phonographic Commission, who kept archives of everything, and there was also the Berlin Ethnographic Society that was interviewing all of these people that were in the camps as part of their anthropological study. So I was really desperate to find material of Douglas Grant from those times, and I did manage to find a few photographs and a sculpture that was made of him by one of Germany's leading sculptors at the time, a guy called Rudolf Marcuse, and Marcuse sculpted Douglas Grant. So I often think that that Douglas Grant's kind of one of those kind of Forrest Gump sort of characters. He brings together all these other famous figures. So Douglas Grant probably met Franz Ferdinand when Franz Ferdinand came out to Australia in the 1890s. And Ferdinand looked in the Australian Museum at all the taxidermy that Douglas Grant's foster father, Robert Grant, would have produced. And maybe Douglas Grant was wheeled out in front of Franz Ferdinand to meet the great man. So, and Franz Ferdinand, as we know, was the Austrian Archduke that was assassinated in 1914 and sparked the whole of the First World War. So Douglas Grant's got these uncanny connections with Franz Ferdinand. Douglas Grant was probably painted by a guy called Thomas Baumgartner, who became Hitler's favourite painter. Douglas Grant was painted in 1919 by Thomas Baumgartner. And so there's a connection to Hitler, and he was sculpted by Rudolf Marcuse, one of the great sculptors of Germany of the time. And when Douglas Grant came back, he was became a very close friend of Henry Lawson, the writer, who was probably the most famous writer in Australia at the time. So there's all these different connections to Douglas Grant and to some of the most famous events and figures of the time that are really uncanny. So, you know, we kind of have thought of him being this sort of Forrest Gump figure, if only Forrest Gump was an intellectual who could quote Shakespeare and Robbie Burns and play the bagpipes.
Yeah, you just mentioned Douglas Grant's meeting with Henry Lawson, the writer. There's also a passage in the documentary where it is said that Douglas Grant strove to make poetry and literature available to soldiers on the front line.
Douglas Grant was a really into literature. Like there's a man, Leonard Adam, who was an anthropologist professor in Germany, a professor of anthropology, and he came out and he became a professor here in Australia, I think at Melbourne University. Leonard Adam was there in the prisoner of war camp. You know, whenever he kind of came in and Douglas Grant was reading literature, like so he loved lots of different writers, and one of his favourite was a British satirist called Jerome K. Jerome. And so Douglas Grant was talking to these professors and saying, well, you know, my dear friend, you might like to read this book by Jerome K. Jerome, and giving him a book of short stories and novels of that guy. And he was reading all of the great Australian poets at that point, Dennis and Lawson and Patterson, and he was reading the anthropologies of early Australian anthropologies, that he had books on that. And so he was a very cultured man of his time who was across all sorts of different areas of scholarly interest. And so when Leonard Adam, this kind of German anthropologist, came in, he was conversing with him as would, you know, any other sophisticated man of the time. So Leonard Adam found him a very impressive figure.
Now, Tom Murray, before I let you go, what would be your take-home message for our listeners?
Well, I think The Skin of Others is a film about Australian history, and it's a film that casts Australian history in a different light from many of the kind of more triumphant versions of Australian history that we often see. But what I think it does is it points us towards a really significant Australian historical figure, Douglas Grant. We don't know very much about him, or we hadn't known very much about him, and I think we really need to know more about that man. He is a totally extraordinary figure of 19th and 20th century Australia. And where the film leaves us is, I think, also an important moment, important Australian moment at this point. It's about, as the Uluru Statement from the Heart has strongly put, like, how do we come to some kind of makarata, some kind of agreement making about where Australia can be that does justice to our history. It's got enough truth-telling that we allow Australian history to be understood better. But where do we take that? What kind of agreements need to be made in order to make Australia a much stronger place? What's our future dreaming? And the film, I think, brings in Uncle Archie Roach and Balang Lewis, who plays Douglas Grant in the film, to think through what is the bridge that we need to cross to get to a more reconciled, stronger, fairer Australia. How do we make that makarata that we need to make in order to heal the wounds of our nation? And actually, as white fellas, I'm a white fella, how do we as white fellas understand what Australian Aboriginal culture, Australian Aboriginal and Torres Strait culture has to allow us to expand our idea of what Australia can be? And I think that's where the story ends. So I hope people get a bit out of it.
Now, Tom Murray, writer and director of In the Skin of Others, a movie that's premiering on SBS Movies on Tuesday, January 25 at 7 p.m. I highly encourage our listeners to watch it, as it is highly informative and shines the light on a significant figure in Australian history. Tom Murray, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
NITV Radio, share our stories on Facebook.
Coming up next on NITV Radio, Sharka Pekova in conversation with Imelda Davis, talking about Nasara Yearning. The event will take place on January 26 as part of Australia Day celebration. The event reflects on our rich and diverse cultural cohesive history, respect for truth-telling narratives as part of the great Australian story, and celebrates resilience and cultural diversity.
NITV Radio, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 1 p.m. or anytime online.
Nasser is a Vanuatu term for meeting place, and yarning is a common practice of tok-tok, talking, amongst Indigenous peoples. It's also a title of an event that will happen on January 26th in Sydney, Nasara Yarning Australia Day 2022. Supported by Australia Day Council and presented by Australian South Sea Islanders. And we are talking to Imelda Davis, who will tell us more about what and where it's happening. Hello, Imelda. Can you please introduce yourself?
I'm the chair of Australian South Sea Islanders Port Jackson, but I'm also the newly appointed councillor to Team Clover for the City of Sydney.
Thank you, Imelda. Thank you for joining us on NITV Radio today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And can I please ask you also about who your mob is?
I am second generation Australian South Sea Islander, Aboriginal Torres Strait and Caribbean descent.
I know we've got you in a very busy time because the big event is happening on January 26th and it's a Nasara Yarning Australia Day 2022. So what is happening?
Okay, so the Nasara is a Vanuatu word for meeting place, and the yarning is something that, you know, we do as Indigenous peoples. And I thought, given the history of Australia, in that Australian South Sea Islanders, descendants of some 60-odd thousand Melanesian labourers and men in particular that were brought here, and we have that evident kinship with our Aboriginal, Torres Strait and Australian South Sea Islander communities, I thought the title and our board, the Nasara Yarning, would be appropriate in bringing together conversations on this very important day to reflect and respect, obviously, and celebrate the resilience of our peoples as a unified community. So on that day, we're going to be opening, obviously, with respect to traditional owners and First Nations people. We have a number of speakers coming in from the Pacific also to speak about climate change. We have Australian South Sea Islander performers coming from Tweed Heads and also Tongan and reggae band to finish it all off with, as well as Caribbean hip-hop and Samoan soul. So it's going to be quite a diverse representation of Indigenous peoples, but also sharing stories of, you know, the challenges that are happening for our communities, which is a focal point for Australia in that we are severely marginalised. And just sharing political agendas as well as celebrating our survival.
And there will be also Black History Yarning. So what's that?
Nasara Yarning is exactly that. It's the coming together. So Nasara is the meeting place and the Yarning is the conversations that we have, as in one talks. Yeah, one talks meaning brethren or brothers, sisters, kinship. So we'll be talking about our diverse stories that exist within our First Nations, Australian South Sea Islander communities.
And who can come to the event?
Anybody can come to the event because it's an Australia Day or Survival Day event, and there'll be many events across Sydney, but anyone's welcome. So they just have to log on and register. So www.A for Apple, S for Sam, I for India, P for Peter, J for Jack.com.au, and go to news and events and you can register to attend the festival. And it'll be a COVID-safe managed event supported by the Australia Day Council.
And my very last question, can you please tell us exactly where and at what time is the event happening?
Absolutely. The event starts 1 p.m. sharp at Pirama Park, P-I-R-R-A-M-A Park, Piermont on Pirama Road, which is really at the end of Harris Street in the city. So if you come down from George Street onto Harris Street, and it'll go from 1 until 6 p.m.
Perfect. Thank you so much. That was Imelda Davis, who is one of the organizers of the Nasara Yarning Australia Day 2022.
Thank you so much.
And time for a break now. And when we come back, well, we'll see how the latest health advice as we continue to grapple with COVID-19.
Join NITV Radio on Facebook.
Welcome. Welcome back. Now, Victoria has announced its back-to-school plan with a range of COVID-19 health measures to ensure students can safely return to the classrooms for 2022. While authorities and health experts support the need for children to return to face-to-face learning, there are concerns that the first term will have a disruptive start.
NITV Radio, share our stories on Facebook.
Students are returning to Victorian classrooms at the end of January after COVID-19 forced many children to experience up to 18 months of broken and remote learning. The Victorian government has released its back-to-school plan, which includes the delivery of more than 14 million rapid antigen tests to primary and secondary schools. Premier Daniel Andrews says every measure will be taken to protect staff and students from COVID-19.
The features of school returning will be twice weekly rapid antigen testing. That surveillance testing is all about detecting cases, not necessarily every case, that would be almost impossible given the amount of transmission that's in the community, but it's about finding as many cases as we can and shutting down those chains of transmission.
Mr. Andrews adds that remote learning will only be used as a last resort.
It'll be challenging. Not everything will go exactly as we had hoped. That's the nature of this virus. There's no response that's perfect. But through hard work and goodwill, I'm absolutely confident that we'll get our kids back and we'll keep them there and we'll keep them safe as we possibly can.
Under the plan, medically vulnerable students and teachers at special ed schools will be urged to have tests 5 days a week. More than 50,000 air purification devices have been ordered and will be delivered to government and low-fee non-government schools in time for the start of Term 1. Deputy Premier James Malino says purifiers in classrooms alongside staff vaccination mandates and masks for years 3 and above are all considered to be strong lines of defence against the virus.
More than 99.7% of staff were double dosed by the end of Term 4. So I have got every confidence that staff will enthusiastically respond to the third dose vaccine mandate.
Parents will be notified and asked to monitor their child for symptoms if a positive case of the virus is detected, but schools will no longer be required to close. Professor Sharon Goldfield, a pediatrician from the Royal Children's Hospital in Melbourne, says the return to in-person learning will boost children's emotional well-being.
As kids go back, as we get the benefits of the mental health and well-being of children and being at school, we also think about, okay, what are the opportunities for really reinforcing that within that extraordinary setting called schools and early childhood education and care that can really look after children's mental health and well-being as well as their development and their learning.
New South Wales is adopting an almost identical back-to-school plan after a collaboration between the two states. Premier Dominic Perrottet says keeping children in school is his number one priority.
We all know that kids do better at school, not just from an educational perspective, but from a mental health and social outcome perspective. It is where our kids learn the best and where opportunity is created.
Chief Medical Officer Kerry Chant says there is likely to be a surge in cases when schools open, regardless of the protection put in place.
Try and minimise their children's activities or connections with other children in sleepovers and other activities that might drive infection so that we can preserve that face-to-face time at school.
While many parents support the plan, some remained concerned about how the safety measures may affect their children.
Personally, I think two tests is a bit excessive. I think maybe one a week. I'm fine with that as long as, like, the tests are done at home. I wouldn't trust someone else constantly testing my daughter at school.
It's a pain for kids. So just by hearing that two tests per week, that's a bit too much for kids, I guess.
However, the New South Wales Teachers Federation is worried about the health and safety of students, staff and families across the state. Federation President Angelo Gavrielato says it will be a disruptive start to the school year and many staff are feeling anxious.
There is no other industry where one is required to be on a work site, literally with hundreds of other people, in some instances more than 2,000, stuck in restricted often poorly ventilated spaces, also known as classrooms, with up to 30 people.
Queensland has already delayed the start of the school year. Health Minister Yvette Dodd has thanked the parents who have brought their young children forward to get vaccinated.
5 to 11-year-olds, we are now almost at 25%, which means almost one in four of our 5 to 11-year-olds are vaccinated now, 24.62%. And I remind parents that it's just as important to get your 12 to 15-year-olds vaccinated as well. We are not at 70% double dose for the 12 to 15-year-olds. So we really want to see those numbers come up before they start the school year.
South Australia has also announced a staggered return to face-to-face learning. This story was produced for us by Brooke Young for SBS News.
You're with NITV Radio.
That's all we have for you for the program today. Our next program is on Wednesday, January 26th. January 26th, Australia Day, but also called Invasion Day or the Day of Mourning by many within the First Nations community. Really a very, very controversial day. Because of the pandemic, most of the events marking the event will be held online, including the dawn service across many cities around Australia. SBS and NITV will have special coverage of all these events. And don't forget to tune into the program NITV Radio. We also bring you special reports relating to Australia Day with stories from right across the country. Don't forget also check our website. We'll continuously update the website with stories relating to January 26th. Thank you for your company this afternoon. I'm Ben Trenton Ngandami, wishing you a beautiful afternoon. Bye for now.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.